Welcome to the Shirin Tagumim in Parshas Noach. The past couple of nights, we've been going through different translations from the Targum Onkelos and focusing on that particular Aramaic translation. Of course, as we've outlined, the Targum Onkelos is really the crux, the most fundamental of the Tagumim. But as we mentioned last week, when we began our study of the Tagumim, so there's another Targum, two Targumim, which are printed in the standard Mikraos Gedolos, referred to as the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, and then there are fragments of what's referred to as the Targum Yerushalmi. As we pointed out last week, one thing that's clear is that the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel was not written by Yonasan ben Uziel. That's a Gemara in Megillah, Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, where the Gemara says that it was Unkelos who was responsible for the Targum and Chamisha Chumashe Torah. Yonasan ben Uziel translated the Nevi'im into Aramaic, but Davka was not involved in the translation of the Chumash into Aramaic. And some speculate that the way the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel came to be called, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, was that in the older manuscripts, it was headed with the Rashi Tevas, with the acronym Tuf Yud, for Targum Yerushalmi. This particular Targum is associated with Eretz Yisrael. And at some point, the printers saw Tuf Yud, and they said, oh, Targum Yonasan. You know, they knew that Yonasan ben Uziel was associated with a Targum, was associated with the Targum into the Nevi, of the Nevi'im. So the mistake crept into the Chumashim, but unlike the answer to the famous question, who's buried in Grant's tomb, the question, who wrote the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, does not seem to be Yonasan ben Uziel. Nonetheless, whoever wrote it, it's very, very different in style than the Targum Onkelos. Targum Onkelos, as we've seen, is a very, very literal translation, only really deviating from a literal translation when either there's a question of the corporeality of the Ribbono Shel Olam, in other words, God being described in human terms, where we saw at length yesterday that even in Parshas Noach, there are many, many examples where the Targum Onkelos translates non-literally in order to avoid describing God in human terms, or in certain circumstances where a literal translation would run against the Torah Sheba'al Peh. So we saw that at least part of the time, the Targum Onkelos translates those phrases non-literally in order to make the Torah Shebiksav and the Torah Shebaal Peh accord with one another. The Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is not a literalist in terms of his translations. He's very, very much a source for beautiful and tremendous Midrashim. Some of the Midrashim we find in other sources. Some of the Midrashim are unique to the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel. What I want to try to do tonight is to do at least one, maybe two, of the shorter stories in Parshas Noach with the Targum of Yonasan ben Uziel, to see some of the interesting additions that the Yonasan ben Uziel adds into the stories as presented in the parasha itself. And we'll see some interesting contrasts between the Yonasan ben Uziel and Onkelos, not just in terms of the Midrashim, where the Yonasan ben Uziel has them and Onkelos doesn't have them, but also specific translations where, when we pay close attention, there are different subtleties that are involved over there. So let's start in Perek Tes, Pasuk Chaf, with one of the smaller stories in Parashas Noach. Vayochel Noach Isho Adama. Noach was Mechel, a man of the earth. Vayitakorim, and he planted a vineyard. What's the word Vayochel, the verb, which is used in this pasuk? Vayochel Noach Isho Adama. Noach was Mechel, a man of the earth. So Rashi quotes from Bereishis Rabba, Vayochel Asa Atzmo Chulin. The word Vayochel means he degraded himself. Noach made himself mundane by getting involved in planting a vineyard. Shahayol Olasot Chilo Benatia Acheres. Who told you that you had to go plant, of all things, a vine, and grapes, and make wine, as we're going to see, that you were asking for trouble, plant coconuts, plant pineapples, what are you planting wine for, right after the mabul? We see that the wine is going to get him into trouble. So one looks in the Targum Onkelos, and then we'll look in the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel, The Unkelus translates the verb differently. Vishari Noach, Givar Polach Ba'ara. The word Vishari means that he began. The first endeavor, Vayachel, not from Chulin, but from the word Lahaschil, to begin, the first thing that Noach began right after the flood was to plant a vineyard. There isn't the judgment of Noach according to this translation. According to Rashi's translation of the pasuk is being critical of Noach. Noach degraded himself by planting a vineyard. According to the Targum, no, it's just the first thing he did was to plant a vineyard. Right, so Vishari means to undo something, right? So, in other words, when you say something is mutter literally means it's open, it's undone, as opposed to usser, which means that it's tied up. So, the word for mutter is shari, but shari also means to begin something in the sense of you're opening up, and you're opening something up. You're like the same way we'd say in English, you know, the opening of something is the beginning of something. Yeah, so in this context, it means Vayachel, he began. He began. And as he began with planting a vineyard, and it's possible that the sense in which it means beginning is as follows. He was the first person to begin this effort of planting vines. Vishari Noach Gevar Polach Ba'ara. Right? He was the first man to work the ground. Now, Why did the Targum choose not to translate Vayochel like Rashi, that it's a lashon of chulin, that it's degrading himself? Why did he choose to translate it, he began? Not 100% clear. I mean, the truth is, there are other Rishonim besides Rashi who, like the Targum Unkelus, learn that he's beginning something, not that he's degrading himself. But perhaps a little bit of a hint as to why the Unkelus translates it the way he does, we find in the much more expansive discussion of the Yonos Ben Uzio. The Yonos Ben Uzio writes as follows: Vishari Noach lemehevi gvar polach ba'ara. Noach, again, this first part of the translation is exactly the same as Unkelus. Noach began to be a person who would work the ground, but then we find something totally different. Va'ashkach gufna, he found a vine. Demashche Nahara min Ginonisa de Eden. He found a vine that the river had carried from Gan Eden. Where did he get this vine from? You know, in other words, where did he get the raw material to plant this vine? So the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel says it was a holy vine, in a sense. It was a vine that had been carried by one of the four rivers that had left Gan Eden, and this vine made its way to Noach after the flood. V'natzve l'karma, he planted it as a vineyard. Ubei b'yoma, and that very same day, anetzas, it produced flowers. Uvashelas invin, and grapes ripened on the vineyard on that very same day. V'atzerinun, and he squeezed the grapes and made them into wine. So in other words, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel adds a lot of, you know, the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel obviously is not reading these words back into the Pasuk. There's no way you can see in the Pasuk a word that says that he planted a vineyard that grew grapes that were totally ready that very same day. I mean, there's nothing, no indication of that in the literal meaning of the Pasuk. But the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is recording over here a Medrash that this was, so to speak, a very, very special vine. It was a vine that came from Gan Eden itself, and because the vine came from Gan Eden, it had spectacular properties that were associated with it. Right? And the truth is, the Medrash is answering a little bit of a pshat question in the Psukim as follows. When you read the story in pshat, he plants the vineyard, Vayitakorem, Vayesht minayayin vayishkar. He drank from the wine and he got drunk. That's the next pasuk. What wine? Wait, how do we jump from pasuk 1 to pasuk 2? Right? He just planted a vineyard. Vayesht minayayin. I mean, there's a whole, you know, what happened to all the stuff in the middle? How did he get to wine immediately after planting the vineyard? So there, the Yonasan ben Uziel comes in and says we have a midrashic tradition that the wine basically was produced overnight. He planted the vine. It grew right away, produced grapes right away. That very day, he planted it in the morning. In the afternoon already, you know, he was sitting there with his Baron Herzog and drinking away, right? So one of the things that you see, I think, in this Targum Yonos and Ben Uziel is a little bit of an explanation as to why both Targumim translate Vayochel as he began, as opposed to he degraded himself. Because how could you say that Noach degraded himself by planting a vine that came from Gan Eden? There was something positive about what Noach was doing right after the flood. You know, the very fact that this came from Gan Eden, that it grew so quickly, was a good sign. The message may perhaps is, wine can be very wonderful. It's just it has to be used properly. Noach, perhaps through ignorance, didn't use it properly. But, you know, fundamentally speaking, the idea of planting a vineyard and having wine is a good thing. It's not like Rashi says, Vayochel, that he degraded himself. Let's keep reading in the story. So the pasuk goes on to say, Chofal vayesh min hayayin vayishkar. He drank from the wine, which, again, according to the Targum Yonos and Menuzio, had been produced in the same day, and he got drunk. Vayiskal b'soch ahalo. He uncovered himself in the tent. Vayar chom avichnan es ervas aviv. Chom, the father of Knan, sees his father uncovered. Vayagei l'shnei echov b'chutz. And he tells his two brothers, Shem and Yefes, b'chutz. What's b'chutz? So, Pashut Upshat, again, if I didn't know any better, I would say Bachutz means outside. Right? What do you mean outside? Well, because it says that Noach was uncovered in the tent. Chom went into the tent and saw him uncovered. He went outside and told his brothers. So both the Targum Onkelos and the Targum Yonos and Ben Uziel translate the word chutz differently. And not just outside, and we'll see that this also helps us understand what was so terrible about what Chom did. So the Targum Onkelos writes, "V'chavi litrei achohi bashuka." He showed his two brothers bashuka in the marketplace. We find that the word chutz can mean outside, but it can also mean a marketplace, a very public kind of setting, right? Od yishama be'ore Yehuda v'chutzos Yerushalayim. Chutzos Yerushalayim means the open spaces, the open markets of Yerushalayim. So in other words, it's not just that Chom left the tent and, his two brothers were standing right outside and he told them. He went and told them in a very, very public place. It was very, you know, he was very demeaning of his father.
Is this right after?
Right, okay, so Lechora, there must have been some other people there, right? Because otherwise, what's a marketplace, right? In other words, how long already after the Mabul is it? Not so long after the Mabul, right? Maybe the marketplace in this context simply means the women, right? In other words, besides the three sons, there's Mrs. Noach, you know, Na'ama, and the son's three wives. So Hagam, that's, you know, modern day terms, we wouldn't call that much of a marketplace, but that's something. In other words, he told the brothers in the presence of the other people who were alive at that time, which was basically the four women, you know, who were there at that time. It sounds like this was very, very quickly after the Mabul. So again, it doesn't sound like there would have been time for there to have been a major population explosion. So what happened? So again, we know the Torah tells us, Shem and Yefes take a garment, they walk backwards, they cover over their father's nakedness. And then we read in Chof Dalid, Vayiketzi Noach miyeno, Noach woke up from his wine, Vayeda eis asher osolo b'no hakoton. And he knew at that point what his younger son had done to him. How did he know? Right. So first of all, what did his younger son do to him? What did his young son Bnei Hakatan do to him? The simple pshat in the pasuk is just that Cham advertised the fact that his father was lying drunk and naked in the tent. So how on earth did Noach know that? Right. So we know Rashi brings that no, actually, what happened was more than that. Back in pasuk Chav Beis. Vayar es ervas aviv, you know, he saw the nakedness of his father. Yesh omrim sirso, yesh omrim rivo. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin that he either castrated Noach or he was intimate with Noach. Again, in those cases, you know, Noach would certainly realize that something had been done while he was sleeping. But how did he know that Cham was the person who was involved? And how did he know all of this? So the Yonatan ben Uziel brings the following. V'itar Noach min chamre. Noach woke up from his wine. V'ida b'shtaus chelma. And he knew through the revelation of a dream. Right? In other words, while he was sleeping, there was a prophetic dream of sorts that came to Noach and showed him everything that was in the course of taking place. And then he knew Yasta Avid Lecham Bereiduhu Kalil Bizuchusa. He knew everything that Cham, his son, who was the smallest in terms of his merits, had done to him. So here the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel is touching on a point which Rashi brings as well, and that's as follows. The Pasuk describes Cham as Beno Hakaton, as the youngest son of Noach. Comments Rashi, Benoah Koton, Hapostle Vahabozui. Right? He was the son who was invalid and rejected. Why? Because Cham is not biologically the youngest son of Noach. Right? The Rishonim talk about what order they were born in. Some say that Shem was the youngest. Some say that Riephas was the youngest. But Cham clearly doesn't seem to be the youngest. He's described when the three sons of Noach are described. He's right in the middle. So why would you describe Cham as Beno HaKotan? So Rashi writes, Koton over here doesn't mean the youngest. It means the least worthy, you know, the lowest of the sons. Right? And that's what the Targum Yonasan ben Uziel writes as well. The least of the sons in terms, the lightweight in terms of his merits. And what did he see? So he saw, says the Yonatan ben Uziel, the garim le delo yoli barivii. Noach saw that Cham had done something to him to prevent him from having a fourth son. He already had the three sons, Shem, Cham, and Yefes. So he saw that he was impacted upon in such a way that he wouldn't have a fourth son. Again, it sounds like the Yonatan ben Uziel is adopting the position in Rashi, you know, quoting the Gemara, that what happened was Sirus. There was that Cham castrated Noach and prevented him from being able to have another son. So in light of that revelation, Pasuk Chafei, Vayomer Orur Kinoan. So Noach said, "Cursed is Knaan. Eved Pola, Eved Avodim Yiyele Echov. A slave of slaves, he should be to his brothers." So the question in Pshat is, I don't understand. So Cham does something to Noach, and Cham's son Knaan gets cursed. How does that follow? What did Knaan do over here? It's the first time that he's coming into the picture. So the Yonatan ben Uziel, again, based on the Midrashim, follows through, and he says, look, Cham impacted on Noach that he wouldn't be able to have a fourth son. Says the Yonatan ben Uziel, Noach says, lit Knaan, let Knaan be cursed, dehu brei revi'i. He is the fourth son of Cham. Again, you still have to explain, okay, so just because he's the fourth son of Cham, but he still doesn't sound like he did anything, but at least there's a midah keneged midah, there's a certain tit for tat over here. Noach was prevented from having a fourth son. So the perpetrator, Cham, who does have a fourth son, that fourth son, yeah, okay, he'll be a fourth son, but he's going to be cursed in a certain way. How will he be cursed? So, Eved Avodim Yiyeh Le'echav, a slave of slaves, he should be to his brothers. What does it mean to be a slave of slaves? So, the Targum Unculus translates, non-literally in this case, Eved Polach Yehei Le'achohi, a slave who works, he should be to his brothers. As opposed to what? What's a slave who doesn't work? I guess a slave who doesn't work is a slave who's not doing a good job, right? But what does it mean to have a slave who works as opposed to a, you know, what's the flip side of that? So, yeah.
Because Noah, if we learn from the passage that Noah did something that the curse of Adam was removed and he wouldn't have to work the earth in such a difficult way.
Okay, very, very good. So Noah actually made life easier. So now, for Canaan, things are going to get harder, right? So, beyond that also, one can suggest the following. You know, an Eved, which translates as slave, can mean different things in different contexts. What do I mean by that? So take, for example, in Parshas Chayesara, we're going to read about, you know, the Eved Avraham, right? The slave of Avraham, Eliezer, right? So, right. So, what was Eliezer's job description? Right. So, you know, he wasn't a. It doesn't seem like he was a slave in the sense of go build this building for me or go shine my shoes or the like. You know, Chazal described Eliezer as the Talmud of Avraham Avinu. He's learning from Avraham Avinu. He was his personal assistant. You know, if a politician, let's say, has a chief of staff. So yeah, the chief of staff is a subordinate to the politician, but you wouldn't say that he's the slave of the politician, right? In other words, he's not, you know, he may be helping the politician work out his agenda and his, you know, his schedule for the day, but he's not polishing his shoes. I mean, at least, you know, we hope that's not what he's doing, right? So, Eved Avodim Yiyeh Le'echav, the Targum Unculus understands, Knaan should be a real slave, not just like a chief of staff kind of slave, a real slave, an Eved Polach. An Eved Avodim is used in the sense of an ultimate slave. Just like, conversely, we talk about, you know, a king, a really powerful king, as being Melech Malchei HaMelochim, right? A king over kings, right? And the Ribbono Shel Olam is the Melech Malchei HaMelochim, is the king of kings. Right, so an Eved Avodim is the ultimate slave. You know, the slave who's lowest on the totem pole. Not just the slave who organizes things, but you know, a slave who actually works. So then so that's the curse given to Canaan, and then Noach says, "Vayomer Baruch Hashem Elokei Shem v'hichnan Eved Lomo." Blessed is Hashem, the God of Shem. Knan should be a servant to him. Yaft Elokim liyefes v'yishkan bi'ohal leishem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be yaft for yefes, which is clearly a play on words. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should be yaft for yefes. V'yishkan, and he will dwell bi'ohal leishem, in the tents of Shem. So there are two brachos over here that are given to Yefes. Let's try to understand them each in turn. What's the meaning of the word yaft? So here we actually find an interesting phenomenon. There's a machlokus, the Targum Unculus, with the Targum Yonasan ben Uzio. The Targum Unculus understands the word yaft as being similar to an Aramaic word. The Targum Yonasan ben Uzio understands it as being similar to a Hebrew word. So what do I mean by that? So if you look in the Targum Unculus, he writes, what's yaft? Yafte Elokim Liyefes, which means God should expand the boundaries of Yefes, right? And Rashi quotes this interpretation of the Targum Unculus. Yafte Elokim Liyefes is Rashi. Meturgam Yafte Yarchiv. He should expand, right? That Yefes should be Zoche to have a very expansive territory. The word Yafte really is more Aramaic than it is Hebrew. We don't, you know, the word in Hebrew for expansion is harchava. The Targum Yonos HaMeruziyo translates the phrase, Yashpar Hashem Tuchume de Yefes. Kodesh Baruch Hu should make the boundaries of Yefes, the area of Yefes, Yashpar, beautiful. Clearly he's taking the word Yaft and relating it to the Hebrew word Yofa, which of course means beautiful. So in other words, you have a machlokis over here, what's the exact etymology of the word Yaft? Is Noach blessing Yefes that you should have beauty, or that you should have expansion? That's one element that's being discussed over here. Then we find the Yishkan Bi'alei Shem. He should dwell in the tents of Shem. Targum Unculus writes as follows, V'yashrei shechinte b'mashkenei Shem. The reference, V'yishkan Bi'alei Shem, is to the Ribbono Shel Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam should cause his Shechina to rest in the tents of Shem. Right? And Rashi quotes this Targum Unculus affirmatively, and he explains what that means. He quotes the Gemara in Yuma, that afal pi sheyaft Elokim liyefes, even though HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to give expansiveness to Yefes, how so? That Koresh, who is a descendant of Yefes, builds the second Beis HaMikdash, lo sharsa bo shechina. However, the shechina doesn't fully come into the second Beis HaMikdash. There are five things that the second Beis HaMikdash lacks that were present in the first Beis HaMikdash. The Heichon Sharsa, where was the Shechina fully? In the Beis HaMikdash that was built by Shlomo HaMelech. Right? So that's the bracha, the way Rashi interprets the Targum over here. The Targum Yonos HaMeruziyo has a different interpretation of V'yishkan Bi'al Leishem, and we'll finish with this. He writes as follows, a beautiful, beautiful idea. He says, with regard to Yefes, Yisgairun Benohi, I give a bracha that the descendants of Yefes will convert, v'yishron b'midrasho d'shem, and those descendants of Yefes will then live, so to speak, in the batei medrash, the tents that are associated with Shem. In other words, it's a bracha that Shem is going to be the source of Torah enlightenment, which we know is true not only of Shem's descendants, but of Shem himself. Shem himself founded a beis medrash, which spread knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the like, the Yishkan Bi'alei Shem, and they, the descendants of Yefes, will ultimately make their way back to the tents of Shem as well. They will find in what Shem has to offer something which speaks to them as well.